pre-Brooklyn.
Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
What is Love Radio Show is sponsored by Fantasy App. Fantasy is a safe space to communicate about your fantasies and passions without fear of judgment. It is a dating app for open-minded couples and singles to experiment with your desires that don't have to be secret anymore.
And welcome to What is Love on Radio Free Brooklyn. It's December 31st, 2017. We're within the last few hours of one of the wildest years on planet Earth. And we're here. It's 2 p.m. and we're live at Radio Free Brooklyn in Bushwick. And I have your host of this show as my guest. The tables have turned. We've switched seats. Sasha.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Sasha Sugar, and this is What is Love Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. Hey, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
I'm in the seat of the guest today.
Yeah, she's sitting across from me.
It feels a bit awkward.
It's not awkward. We're doing great. First, let's talk a little bit about what you wanted to do here today and why you asked me to interview you.
Awesome. Thanks, Asha, so much for being here and for doing this with me.
I didn't introduce myself. Everyone, right. I'm Asha. You've Asha. Heard me on this show before.
Right. And everybody has complimented on your voice.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for subbing for me previously. Anyways, we at Radio Free Brooklyn, we were given an option to not have live shows on the 31st for obvious reasons. It's one of the biggest holidays in the year. And I also had this option to just play an archived show. But something in me said that, no, Sasha, you have to use this opportunity for yourself and for others to just reflect on your journey. It has been the most interesting, important, and yet difficult year in my life, and it's important for me to reflect on it. And also, I felt like sharing everything I have experienced and everything I have learned with y'all guys. Of course, I could just come here and sit on my own and talk like a lunatic, but I felt that if I have Asha, who's done such a great job on What is Love before and is doing a great job on her own show, if I had her interviewing me, that would be a better way to reflect on whatever has happened in 2017.
Yeah, and it feels like you need a taskmaster. There's so much you want to talk about, so much that has happened to you this year. you need someone to be like, all right, Sasha, it's time to move on to the next thing. So yeah, that exactly. will be my job. I'll let you do the talking and I'll do the watching the clock. So my first question for you is, where were you at this time last year? You can be specific where you were at December 31st, 2016, or you can be vague, like yeah. where was your heart and mind at around sure. the end of last year?
I will be both, okay. just as an omnipresent God, which we'll get to a bit later. Hopefully, I'll try to cover both aspects. Exactly a year ago, on December 31st of 2016, at this time, I was in the Russian banya, Russian sauna in Brooklyn on Neck Road. Super hangover because the night and the morning before, from the 30th on 31st of December, I threw a party and I was drinking a lot of tequila and snorting a lot of cocaine. So high and a bit hangover, the next morning at like 9 a.m., I went to the Russian banya to
That's
just
impressive,
sweat it out. Yeah, and I didn't even die. So that was a good thing because I felt my heart was going crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, because that's kind of a tradition in the Eastern European cultures to go on the 31st of December to go to the Russian banya and just wash off all the whatever sins, dirt, negative stuff that happened in the previous year and come fresh into the new one, which I did. But the way I did it wasn't very pure and clean, like I just mentioned.
Yeah, you can't wash out your insides at the Russian bath.
Right. Right.
They don't get your stomach and your brain and your intestines. So where were you a little more vaguely? Like, what was your life like at the end of last year?
The end of last year was a bit difficult for me emotionally. I came to full realization that something wasn't working. And I thought I was doing okay. I was going out, I had a job, I had friends, but the way I was doing it wasn't good way for me. More specifically, I was drinking a lot. Anytime I would go out with my friends for a dinner, I would have a cocktail or two or three or five, and I was also doing a lot of cocaine. And I'm not I don't object drugs. I'm okay with drugs, but especially if they're social drugs. But then at some point I've realized that I was emotionally connected to cocaine, and a few times I just did that with my friend in front of the TV and we would just watch Netflix. Like we didn't even have to go out. We didn't go out dancing. We just stayed home.
Cocaine
and ridiculously,
was the main event.
Yeah, it was just like, why would we even do it? So we did it for no reason, but because I felt like I was bored, or I had this void in my heart, and I just wanted some action, and I was just doing it for no reason.
It's numbing. It's a numbing agent. It can make excitement out of nowhere.
Right. And you know me, I'm a very excited person in general. Yeah. I'm probably a bit more excited than any average person. And I don't believe in averages, but I can mention the average in this example. I am hyper and enthusiastic, energetic. I don't really need cocaine. And the fact that I was doing it just because I had it and because I was bored, it was a bit concerning. On top of that, by accident, I went to see a fortune teller that just saw me and bluntly asked me if I had issues with drugs.
Was that the first thing she said? She was like, hi.
Well, she kind of asked the names of my parents. It was him, actually. He asked the names of my parents. He could immediately see that I had some issues in my family with alcohol. Like my father used to drink, on top of other things. And I started kind of talking, well, I don't know what I want to do for life, what I want to do is my career. And he was just, do you have issues with drugs? And I said, no, I don't. I mean, yeah, I sometimes do whatever, ecstasy or cocaine when I go out, but not really. And he said, well, you will have an issue with drugs if you don't stop now. And I said, yo, dude, you know, back off. Like, yeah. Everything's under control. Like, what are you talking about? And, you know, of course, it's coming from a very intelligent person with a master's degree and a person that has been kind of read, very well aware of drug culture and drug influences. So I was like, no, yo, everything's under control.
You don't know me.
Yeah, you don't know me. So, and then I was like, well, so when am I going to get married and have kids? You know, the typical question that you ask a fortune teller. Uh-huh. And he's like, honey, like, girl, you got to take, put your get your shit together. You're going to have some issues with drugs. I was like, okay, whatever. I gave him $100 and left. And
seems like you overpaid him. But
I know, right? but it was last November, and his words, of course, stayed in my mind. And I remember the following 2 months, November and December, I've done so much drugs that I probably didn't do for the whole year. It's almost like I was punishing myself for...
After the fortune teller?
Yeah, after the fortune teller. It was almost
like... You were like, I'll show him.
I show him. Yeah, you want me to have drugs issues? Okay, I'm going to have drugs issues.
Yeah.
It was just so weird because I knew that I might have an issue. I mean, he said that, and I like drugs, right? I've always known that I love drugs. I still love drugs. I can talk about it forever, but... Despite the fact that I knew that I might have issues with that, and despite the fact that I was in a really kind of dark place emotionally, I kept doing them. And like I just mentioned, I ended the year with a bunch of cocaine. Actually, on 31st, after Rosh Hashanah, I did shrooms, I did weed, I did cocaine, I did tequila, all at once, all in one night.
It's a lot.
And yeah, and I was just so, my heart was going crazy. And then I woke up the January 1st, and that's it. And I was just like, okay, this is it. And I quit doing any substance.
You quit altogether. You told me, skipping back a day, you told me when we were preparing about a woman you ran into at the bath.
Oh, okay. That was another thing. You see, once you get on this journey, which we'll talk about a bit later throughout the show, things just start happening to you. Yeah, so right before the New Year's, she was not in the bunny, but I was like, okay, I need to treat myself. It's the end of the year. I need to take care of my body. On top of the fact that I was doing a lot of drugs, I felt like, well, I need to have some balance in my life, right? So let me go and treat myself with the body wrap.
Let me go sweat a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Do drugs, go sweat them out. So I went to do the body wrap, and as I always do with... whatever, people that execute some kind of work on my body. It doesn't sound right, but it is. I always just have a conversation about life. And so we start talking, and I said to her that, well, I wasn't sure what I want to do in my life. I wasn't happy with my career, my personal life, and all the typical stuff. And she just said, girl, you got to plug in, you know, you got to. And I was like, what do you mean plug in? She's like, you know, you got to plug in. You got to listen to yourself. You have to plug in. And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go again. Another person talks about plugging in, reconnecting with yourself. I paid you $60 for the body wrap. And I laughed. But kind of all these things coming together, and the fortune teller and this lady, and then my personal sensations and thoughts and emotions that just really got me into the dark place, it all kind of came together. And I felt I had this new mission. I need to take care of myself. I need to plug in. I need to reconnect with myself, whatever that means. I'm still, you know, whatever, what it means to connect with yourself. That became my mission. And on January 1st, I woke up with a terrible hangover, but I knew that day that I'm that serious now. I'm going to give it a proper try. Mm-hmm. Before I decide to go back to my previous habitual behaviors.
Right. I love that plug-in because it sounds a little bit like self-help bullshit, but it also is so nondescript. It's not saying to do anything that's outside of yourself. It's like literally just listen to yourself.
Right. The only thing is that that lady, she was Christian, which I found out later. And by plugging in, she also meant, no, but that's all connected.
Yeah.
And I really want to talk about it, probably even today, if not today, then on my other shows.
Definitely today. Really we're getting to it.
Connecting with yourself and connecting with the God, it is kind of the same thing. It's just our perception of God is so fucked up by all the social concepts and the media and the books that we really, we don't connect the two dots together. And at least I wasn't connecting them to. I felt like, okay, I need to first reconnect with myself. And then maybe, well, I didn't think that about God at that stage. But now I see that those two processes are together.
Beautiful. Okay, so January 1st, you wake up and you're deciding to cut your habits cold turkey.
Right. And I did that.
What happened? How did your body react?
My body...
How did your brain react?
Actually, quitting drinking was surprisingly easy for me. It was a bit hard to see negative reaction from my friends. Yeah, I used to be a big drinker. I'm from Eastern Europe. I was a heavy metal kid. I drank a lot in my life. And everybody kind of got used to the fact that, you know, when they go out with Sasha, they're going to have at least a drink. So when all of a sudden, you know, people start calling me, hey, let's go grab a dinner, let's go get a drink. And I would be like, well, I'm kind of not drinking. The first month, it was easy because I could just kind of say, oh, it's dry January.
Yeah, you know, people do that in January.
Yeah, everybody's having a dry month. But then I kept going with this.
Uh-huh.
And it was hard for my friends. They thought that, I don't think they all believed in me. But I didn't drink. For some reason, drinking was not an issue at all for me. I felt like, wow, that's actually quite surprising. So I did not drink for a long time. I had a few margaritas when I went to Mexico, and then I had some vodka when I went in May to my best friend's wedding to Belarus, and then I probably had two drinks at Burning Man in August. So I wasn't really drinking much throughout the whole year, and I probably kind of going a bit faster than I should, but I did get drunk this month, almost a year later. And when I did get drunk, I ended up in the hospital. It's kind of, wow. I don't believe I'm sharing this on the radio show, but I had a total blackout on the subway, and police came, and I had a nervous breakdown too, and police came and took me to the hospital.
Yeah.
So basically, I didn't drink the whole year. I felt okay without it. Then I decided to drink, and that would happen.
Right.
And it was almost like the universe just was saying, Sasha, no, that you cannot go back to your old behaviors. That you're done with that. That's it.
Yeah, that experience seems harrowing, but like a blessing to know that really isn't what you're supposed to be doing anymore.
Well, it kind of sucks because I do like alcohol, but I can't go back to that.
Well, it's funny though. You did mention having a few drinks very socially.
Yeah.
Your best friend's wedding, a vacation to Mexico. You drink margaritas.
Yeah.
So those experiences didn't land you in the hospital.
No, because I only had a drink or two.
Yeah, I think that if you look back on your year in drinking, it's a sign that you actually can drink and you can enjoy and you can participate in it culturally. But you don't have to get drunk, and you probably shouldn't because bad shit will happen.
Right. The only thing is I despise the whole idea of doing something culturally or socially.
Do you?
I do, yeah. If I want to drink, I want to either taste a great flavor of the liquor, or I want to have a night of blast.
Right.
I'm against the whole idea of just going out for a nice glass of wine. Like, come on, dude. I mean, unless it's a very nice glass of wine, but if it's just something that unconsciously goes with the social setting, then I think it's a waste of
I agree. Yeah. I see
liquor.
What you mean. I think there is a good distinction too between socially, culturally, like the culture of Brooklyn or whatever, like going out to drink because people here do that and you feeling a need to participate in that. But I think what I meant by culturally was like, if you're in a place that has the best tequila in the world,
absolutely,
you need to try the tequila.
And I love tequila. That's kind of the issue. Yeah, tequila is so good. Ugh. Anyways.
So that was your year in drinking. About your year in drugs? How did that go? And actually, let me make that a two-part question. You decided to quit cold turkey, your cocaine, the drugs that you were doing before. Right. But I know you did have some profound psychedelic experiences this year. So that's drugs too. So let's,
I don't consider those drugs. So when I gave up drugs, I just stopped doing everything. Also, any substance, I stopped taking it. Instead, and now I'm going to respond in a long form because all things were connected on this journey. So I stopped drinking. I stopped taking drugs. By drugs here, I mean any sort of substance, including weed, which I don't object at all. I have no issues with weed. But I felt that I need to get my shit and my mind together. So I don't want any substance in my body. I start doing meditations. I start doing yoga. I start experimenting with different types of workshops. I've tried holotropic breath work. Now, once you get on this spiritual journey, the word is kind of ridiculous. But once you decide that, okay, I want to plug in or connect with my inner self, it also kind of, you kind of also identify with a type of person that is supposed to try different things. And for some time, I was a person. I thought, okay, so now I'm this spiritually awoken person. I need to do yoga. I need to do meditation. I need to do this. I need to try that. It's almost like a list of things that you must do if you are this person.
Totally.
And so I've tried a few things, but the funniest part is that most of them didn't work on me. I even tried, so holotropic breath work is a 6-hour breathing technique. And I witnessed people getting into a huge trance by doing it. Just because you allow so much oxygen in your body that it opens up your third eye, it lets the old emotions come out. I saw a girl dancing like a Hare Krishna goddess after she did the 3 hours of this technique. It did nothing to me. Nothing. I just wasted $250. So then I tried San Pedro, which is it's a cactus from Peru. It's also supposed to open up kind of third eye and just heal your heart. People have profound experiences. It did nothing on me. I was just kind of, you know, I was doing it with the shaman and he was just trying, playing the gong music and giving me to sniff different oils and just trying to bring it up in me. It did nothing to me. So not everything, you know, not everything worked on me. But I was trying. I kept trying different things to find this right methods for me to reconnect with myself. A few months later, somehow I got to the ayahuasca circle, which I'm very grateful for. And again, once you fall on, start doing this journey, things just start happening to you. I've known about ayahuasca for many years, but only this year it actually came to me.
Yeah,
it's so true. I've heard about Burning Man for many years. Specifically this year, it came to me. So it all kind of happens when it's supposed to happen, when you are on this journey.
Yeah. I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Do you think the main reason it came to you is the people you started associating with? You kind of had to disconnect from your party people and plug in with your, I don't know, self-discovery people?
Yes and no. The thing is, no, because I've always had interest in different spiritual practices. In fact, when I was 15, I decided that I wanted to be a Buddhist and I stopped eating and just, it was kind of bad. So I've always had people in my circle that were experimenting with different alternative practices. But for instance, with the even with the, in case with ayahuasca, the person who introduced me to the circle of ayahuasca, he was my masseur. Masseur, is that the word? He was doing massage. Masseur.
Yeah, sounds right.
Right?
Masseur.
Anyways, he was a physical therapist that I met 4 years ago when I had lower back issues in the legit hospital.
Wow.
And but we kind of talked, you know, he was kind of weird and I like weird people. So we kind of connected while he was doing massage for me. And then this past year, this in 2017, for some reason, his image came to me and I was like, yo, he knows for sure where to get ayahuasca in New York.
Yeah.
And I messaged him on Facebook and, you know, and he got me hooked. So it's like...
So you pursued it. It wasn't like this wasn't passively introduced to you. It was something that you were like, I want to try this.
Right. But I wanted to try it a long time ago. And it took me like I was asking other people around, but nobody could introduce me to the right people.
Because
I feel like 2 years ago, I just wanted to try it out of curiosity. I just wanted to do it because, well, kind of, you know, it's a trendy thing to do, or yeah, it's going to help me. It's going to save my life, whatever. But this year, when I seriously became serious about the stuff that sits in me, my emotions, my spirituality, this year it became a feasible opportunity.
Right.
So anyways, I did my first ayahuasca in March and the experience wasn't as profound as I was hoping for. In fact, it showed me that I have a lot of control issues. By my mind, I was trying to control my experience while I was in the ceremony. And because the ceremony wasn't going the way I wanted it to go, I was getting even more upset, even more freaking out about the whole situation.
So interesting, yeah.
It came to the point that I made myself vomit because I thought that unless I purge, it's not going to be a proper ayahuasca experience. So I made myself vomit, which was not an ayahuasca purge. It was my mind purge. And at that moment, I looked at the shaman and he was laughing at me. Like the shaman could sense that Sasha is just like, it's her ego. You know, she's trying to control the process.
Yeah.
So, okay, let her purge. But, you know, it was not a spiritual purge. Anyways, but that first ayahuasca experience showed me that first I have a lot of control issues. And it also showed me that there are other dimensions and other realities that are very, very real. So that's kind of was my first experience.
Now, that is so fascinating. Can I just interject?
Yeah.
Like, to get from this drug that's supposed to be like the ultimate loss of control experience, for it to just demonstrate to you like, oh, you're trying to control this too much. And then for you to have another experience later, which we'll get to, I think that's so like beautiful and poetic. It's just like, control is such a big part of drug use too. It's like the reason we enjoy drugs is that they remove our desire to control things for a brief moment, or they allow us to control very specifically what's going on.
Yeah, well, in my case with drugs, I think it was the, especially with cocaine, it was the opposite. Because when you, have you tried cocaine?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I mean,
okay,
I love
good.
It. Yeah, I mean, it's so, I love cocaine.
I'm from Miami, so.
Oh, God. Thank God it didn't die. Like, I've read this news. They found this new ingredient in cocaine from Miami that just kills people.
Word. Sounds right. I haven't in a long time. I actually haven't done any drugs in four or five years yet.
Yeah, good for you. But with cocaine, it's actually the opposite. I feel like when I do cocaine, I feel like I'm in control of everything. And in fact, when I was doing cocaine with my other friend, we would be able to get into any club without paying shit.
Yeah.
Like we would, it just, things would just happen.
Yeah.
We were just like,
this is totally part of what
the
I
whole
meant.
Situation.
Oh,
so,
I love this.
Right. Okay. Damn it. Anyways, so with the whole control thing, and I think control is one of the biggest aspects in the whole journey of the spiritual awakening. You have to let it go. And the whole God thing, which I hope we will get into today, it's about surrender and giving out the control. Now, why people have control issues?
Why? Are you asking me? I think any number of reasons. It's just, it's feeling like you have control is kind of the only thing that can make life tolerable sometimes.
But Okay. Yes. But then why still? So in my case, I hate that I had to talk about this, but I have control issues because my father was an alcoholic. And only now, I'm not going to start crying, but only now I start to realize it. After ayahuasca, basically, I started going to the ACA meetings, which is an adult children of alcoholics group. It's a program. It's a 12-step program based on the original AA program, mm-hmm. which has helped so many people across the world. So I never really talked about my father's drinking habits in public up until, you know, this year. And I realized, and ayahuasca helped me to realize that all these control issues that I have just coming from the childhood when, you know, I was coming back home and I didn't know in which condition to find my dad. Of course, back then, I didn't reflect so much. And back then, when I was a child, that was a normal condition for me. And I wasn't so self-aware and self-reflective.
Yeah.
I never analyzed that. That was my reality. But now, many years later, I understand what a tremendous impact that our situation in home has had on me.
Of course.
And the fact when you are, you know, like a 10-year-old child and you go home and you have this anxiety or fear in your heart because you don't know whether your father is drunk or sober and what's happening there.
Yeah.
So that kind of led me to, I must control everything in my life. Like I just, if something goes off the schedule, if the person is late, it would just drive me crazy. And same happened with ayahuasca. It wasn't happening the way I thought it was supposed to happen, and I was just losing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, I didn't finish the program because my case wasn't that terrible. My father is awesome guy. Like we never had any violence in the family. And so I felt that my case wasn't as bad as some other cases that I've heard about in that program. And also I started feeling better, you know, the whole, once you get on the spiritual journey, it's just something really starts happening to you. You become kinder, you become more generous, you start doing things for others, you start eating less meat. Like it's not, mm-hmm. it's really just, it just started happening. Like I just felt like I don't want to eat meat and I still don't. I rarely eat meat and I never really made a conscious decision, okay, I want to be vegetarian. It just kind of gradually happened. So I felt, you know, I felt happier. I felt that I'm on the right path. I also had some romantic thing happening in my life at that time, which I wasn't even planning for. So anyways, I felt better overall. And so I stopped doing the program. But what happened to me later this year, this showed me that no, I need to go back and finish the program. Like I need to, and I really that is one of my intentions for 2018 to go back to ACA meetings and do the whole 12-step program.
Yeah,
because only in that program you understand the full the full range of impact that your family has had on you.
Right.
Oh God, that's a lot. So
that is a lot. That's take a minute. That's a vulnerable thing to talk about with the public. I think it's really cool that I can relate to admitting there's a problem with something, like feeling the relief of at least admitting that you have this problem in your life, or at least admitting and acknowledging that there's a dynamic at play that you hadn't previously acknowledged, and that itself can be so freeing. Starting the program probably sent you on this bit of a high, and I'm glad that you're going back to finish the work.
I am going back to finish. The other reason why I want to go back and finish it is when I did the full retreat with the full ayahuasca.
Yeah, let's get
retreat,
to that.
Retreat. Yeah.
Try
number two was, oh wow, it again showed me that I'm fighting myself and I cannot surrender. The second ayahuasca was me trying to get out of my own body and not being able to do that. So I was in complete consciousness. I remember every single minute of my journey. I drank so much ayahuasca because I was hoping that ayahuasca will get me through the bad trip. Basically, I start having a bad trip. Mm. By bad trip, I mean I start having bad visuals, pussies, dicks, asses, like all the, and not pretty dicks and pussies, but just kind of all the very animalistic stuff that a human body can,
of the body.
That a human body can produce.
Yeah.
And the colors and the smells and the sounds. It was just a really nasty trip. And I was just not cool with that.
Yeah.
So I kept coming to Shaman and drinking more and more of ayahuasca, hoping that ayahuasca is going to help me through the trip. But that was not, that was a totally wrong decision. I should have just let it, you know, be, just kind of accept it and it would pass. I didn't do that. So in turn, I was just getting further and further into my bad trip. And at some point, I just felt that something sits in me so badly. And I want it out right now. And I tried to purge. I couldn't purge. And instead, I just started scratching my body, my face, my chest. Mm. The next day I woke up, I was like, I had all the scratches all over my body. I was like, oh, fuck. It's almost like I was possessed by, but at the same time, I was totally in consciousness. So it was like I knew exactly what was happening with me. I knew that I was in the ayahuasca ceremony, but I felt that there is this body sitting in me, which is not me, and I was trying to get it out of me. Anyways, it was a really painful ceremony, which again showed me that I don't know how to surrender. I don't trust. I have trust issues.
Yeah.
And this is a big deal when you're on the spiritual awakening journey. You got to trust the universe. You got to trust God. You got to trust yourself. You have to trust. If you don't trust, that's your ego kicking in. You want to control, forget it. So I also felt that, and I have high resistance to any substance. So I felt that in order for me to have a full experience and a cleanse experience, I need to go to the ayahuasca's motherland, and I need to go for the full like 10-day retreat into the jungles, which I did, and it happened in September. Right after Burning Man. We can talk about Burning Man, but honestly, ayahuasca kind of stole the show. Yeah, stole the show. So
this is your third time, your third
It was third try. Time, but it was a 10-day retreat in the jungles.
Right.
Like it was the hardcore, the real facing yourself, like facing your guts, facing yourself in the jungles. We didn't have any, everybody had their own house, little house, I mean, a tambo with no walls. You slept in the wild nature, like you heard crazy sounds from the insects, from the animals, from the birds, from the stuff falling off the trees. It was pretty scary.
But elemental.
So fundamental. It's crazy. And we had 5 sessions of ayahuasca, like every other day. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's so crazy.
Right. So, and why I'm spending so much time on ayahuasca is, especially the ayahuasca ceremonies in the jungles, you know, I went there to, I was hoping to, you know, reunite with the universe, see the God, or find my purpose in life, or know who I am. And what it showed me that I have so many unprocessed pain and feelings from my childhood, and until I get rid of that, that was so fundamental that I can't progress and move forward until I figure that shit out.
Yeah.
I just give you an example. One of the ceremonies, like I had 5 ceremonies and 4 of them were about my family. I mean, yeah, I saw Buddha, I saw Ganesha, I saw the other universes, but most of my ceremonies were about my family. And at some point, I saw that my father's alcoholism, it was like a disease that came. There was a dark cloud that came over my house in Belarus, and it became a tragedy in our house, in our family. But basically, I saw it, I felt it, and I saw that it wasn't my father's choice. Like, he suffered probably more than I did, than my mother did, than my sister did. He suffered so much because of his disease.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point in my heart, I felt the pain of me, of a child, of little Sasha. I felt the pain of my older sister as a child. I felt the pain of my mother, whose husband is drinking, and, you know, and that's like, she's like 35, she was 35, 36, and basically, you know, she was stuck with a drinking husband. But I also felt the pain of my dad, who was just, you know, who was sick with his disease. And I mean, I cried so much in that ceremony. I was just like, I was breathing. I was just like, you know, trying to breathe heavily because it was so painful. I thought my heart would stop. Like, I've never experienced so much pain. But I also knew that ayahuasca this was my opportunity to feel through all that pain that has been sitting in me for years. It has been sitting in my parents, in my sister, in our family. And I've just, you know, and I knew that ayahuasca is going to help me. So I just kind of, for an hour, I was just crying and let this pain kind of going through my heart, And the next, and you know, that was kind of one of the ceremonies. And the next ceremony, which was in 2 days, I also saw my father, and I saw him. He's now what, 55, and so he lives by himself in Belarus in the house that he built for us. And I actually saw how my father, when he was like 25 or 20, probably 30, how he was building the house brick by brick. I saw it in one of my ceremonies. Like, I didn't see it in reality, but I saw in one of the ceremonies how my dad was just laying the foundation, how he wanted the happiness for his family.
Yeah.
And so I saw him young, and then now I see him the way he's now, 55. He lives by himself. His family, you know, my mom left him. I kind of left him. My sister kind of left him. Not, you know, obviously we left him because of his drinking issues, but because we didn't have a family in Belarus, we all kind of just split up. And I saw him now, and I get into his brain, and I see how much regret my father has for whatever happened to him and to the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that, and then his spirit comes into my heart. Like, I mean, I'm not fucking around, you know, like, I was totally conscious. I'm now very conscious. That's the thing with ayahuasca, you never lose consciousness. Like,
yeah,
you always, you know exactly what's happening. You know that you're in the ceremony. You know that it's not like you're tripping on fucking LSD, you know. So I knew that I felt this warm stream of energy coming into my heart. And I knew that that was my father. And I knew that that moment that I've totally forgiven my father, and my father has accepted my forgiveness for whatever his drinking years that affected our family. And after that, you know, I saw my dad now in November. We all went to Switzerland, where my sister lives now. I have so much love for my father. Like, I was just, you know, hugging him. I just wanted to grab his hand and kiss him. And just, you know, we did sledges. Like, we went to the Alps, and, you know, we couldn't get the skis there. So we just took the sledges. And we sledged just like we did when I was a child.
Yeah.
I felt like it was kind of, the loop was closing. And the pain that I've had as a child because of my father's drinking habits, you know, I'll let it go.
And oh my God.
In that regard, ayahuasca was a tremendous, tremendous help on this journey. And because it opened up my heart to experience and to feel through the things that were stuck in me for years.
Yeah. I think that was a crazy and beautiful highlight of this story so far. Let me just say, it was really beautiful to
watch you
feel so much in here. But I want to say, like, it sounds like ayahuasca was a really helpful tool, but the real key ingredient here and what it led you to that really changed your life was empathy. Just the ability to feel someone else's pain and sit in it and feel your own pain and empathize with your former self. That was like the really transformational element here.
Absolutely. What also ayahuasca did, and I think we should move towards God soon.
Okay.
The show is called From Ayahuasca to God.
Yeah.
But what those five ceremonies in the jungles did for me, they opened up my heart. In fact, my first, like physically, I'm not talking about open your heart and things start happening to you, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I should probably be nicer with those expressions because now I'm a Christian too. Ha ha ha. Yes, here I go, people. I'm a Christian now. Suck it up. I'm just kidding. I'm not. Anyways, physically, the first ceremony in the jungles, I did not have any visuals. I felt stiffness in my heart. Like physically, I felt that my heart is just blocked.
Yeah.
My heart is blocked so much and I can't really experience things. So after the whole retreat in the jungles, I came back, you know, to New York. Prior to that, my boyfriend and I, we broke up and I thought I've dealt with it very good. I was okay. I was grateful for what I've had. But after I came back from the ayahuasca experience, something has changed in me. And by that, I mean my heart became so open that physically open, like all the emotions on the physical level just start, you know, coming through it.
Yeah, you described it as an open wound.
Exactly. My heart became as an open wound. So I start to really live through the heartbreak, like really feeling like, oh my gosh, I love this person so much.
Yeah.
I never showed him this much love, but I loved him so much. And now he doesn't want me anymore. And what do I do with all my love? So I just, you know, like it was coming through me. And in parallel with that, I'm now trying to make a cohesive story. I'm coming from ayahuasca with my heart open as a fucking wound. I'm recovering from a heartbreak and I'm going to the church, Christian church.
What made you start going to church?
That's again, to the point that things are just happening to you. Mm-hmm. When I posted some of my cocaine shit on Facebook early this year, my former coworker from the agency world, you know, I work in the advertising people. Yeah, I'm not proud of that, but it's just temporary, I promise. So I'm going to go and make this world a better place, I promise. So anyways, my former coworker, he saw my Facebook post and he reached out to me once and said, "Yeah, Sasha, I saw your Facebook post. Do you want to come to church with me?" At that point, I was like, yo, sure. You know, I'm doing ayahuasca. I'm doing holotropic breath work. I'm doing kundalini yoga. Yeah, sure. let me go see church.
You were like a spirituality junkie.
I was like flirting with all the guys.
Yeah.
And, or like spiritual whore, whatever you call it.
I love that.
So I went to the church back in February, probably, or March. And it was so weird. It felt so weird. First of all, I was embarrassed to be in the church because, yeah, I'm in the church. Are you kidding me? Look at me. You know, I'm fucking Courtney Love, you know, Kurt Cobain, you know, I'm Marilyn Manson. I'm Antichrist. Like, I'm going to the church. Never. So I felt embarrassed, but I also felt ashamed in front of all those people that it took me so long to go to God. Like, we are embarrassed to come to God because our ego just doesn't, you know, we are afraid to ask for help. We are afraid to surrender. We are afraid to let things go and happen. We are afraid of that. So it was this weird mixture of feelings of being embarrassed. Like, my ego was embarrassed that I'm in the church, but at the same time, my heart and my soul were embarrassed that it took me so long to come to God. So throughout the year, I've kind of been in and out of the church, and I wasn't, you know, I was like, I probably need to give it a try, but not yet. Let me just first do this kundalini yoga. Or let me first do this. Or let me first read this book about, you know, go to Buddhist meditation. I feel like I've always been postponing the God.
Yeah.
And so when I come back after ayahuasca and I start experiencing all those processing all those feelings and emotions from my childhood with my mother, which is probably a different story, but I'll try to mention it in a bit. At this point, I was just like, yo, I need God's help. Like, really, I can't do it on my own. Like, I'm in the fucking deep shit. Like, I need God's help. That's number one. Number two, when you start doing ayahuasca and you see things that you see, you understand that God is real. Like, there is no way God is not real. I mean, I feel so bad for people who don't believe in God, because God is real. You don't believe it? I really feel sorry for you, but God exists regardless of your belief. So he's there or she's there for you. Again, I'm not, you know, let's not talk about the God as an old guy sits in the sky. No, God doesn't have a gender. God is, it's a higher power, it's the energy, it's whatever you want it, whatever you, your brain is capable of grasping. I stopped doubting God. That's my kind of thing that happened after ayahuasca. I knew right there that there is God. Now it's just a matter of how I get to God. How do I find my way to God? How do I actually grasp and comprehend and experience God? Because God is so grand, it's impossible as a human being to just simply experience God. Anyways, so now we are in October, November kind of thing. I'm crying every day because I'm heartbroken. I'm crying every day because I feel that my mother doesn't love me. And
you're just experiencing everything there is to experience with your new open wound.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything is the same as before. You're just like, more in tune with it.
All of a sudden, I start having this, you know, memories from my childhood when I was, you know, bullied, or when I was having my own kind of God, you know, because we children believe in higher power. There's no doubt about it. And when I was a child, I would also, you know, look into the sky, or I would talk to some universe. Like, I would have those experiences. So now, after ayahuasca, my heart is so open that all these memories kind of come back to me, and all these emotions start coming up. And I cried every day for a month, every day. And on top of that, I continued going to the church. And again, I didn't have a Holy Spirit come on me and, you know, this crazy grand experience of God yet. But I chose to believe in God because I don't doubt the God. Like, that's it. God exists. Now it's just going to take me some time to fully embrace the God. And for a month I was crying. I got into such a deep depression that I just remember coming home from work and filling up the bath and going into the bathtub and sitting there for 2 hours and crying. And I just not knowing what to do next, because I felt such a void in my heart that, you know, my boyfriend left me, my mother doesn't love me, I'm here by myself, I don't have anything and anyone in the entire world, and even the God doesn't want to talk to me. I just felt such a void that I really physically didn't know what to do. So I was sitting in my bathtub and crying. And then kind of, because the thing is also with God, you always feel that when God happens to you, it's going to be this tremendous experience. It's going to shake up your life, you know, change you physically, change you emotionally. You're just going to have this out-of-body experience. But in my case, that didn't happen. And it took me a while to understand that there are different ways that the God can talk to you. And the people I've met in my journey, people I've met in the church, people I've met at work, and the way I connected with them was completely different from what I'd experienced before. Hmm. And through them, that was God was talking to me. Through them, God was showing that, yo, Sasha, you're not alone. Like, in the last 3 months, I've made 2 amazing friends that I know for sure they're going to stay with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I know that also it's not just, it wasn't an accident. God is trying to get to me, trying to get to my heart, to my soul. And there are different ways he's trying, or she's trying to do that.
Yeah, I love the idea of higher power manifesting in relationships between people.
Right.
That's totally speaking my language.
No, but that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And at some point, I just start feeling that I have so much joy right now in my heart. I have so much love and joy. Like, I wake up now, I don't cry. I wake up And I'm just so grateful that I'm awake. And I actually can't sleep sometimes because I'm so excited about the next day. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for the morning to happen. I have so much joy.
Yeah.
I can sit on the couch now for an hour and just look into the window and feel in the joy.
Yeah.
But this is God. Like, this is not just me being like in the meditative state. That's me connecting with the higher power in a very subtle, in a very, very subtle way that is hard to explain in words.
So that's beautiful. We have 5 minutes left. I think that's just like, let's take a second to think about how beautiful that is. You went from a place where you weren't really reflecting at all. This time last year, you were sort of letting the substances do the reflection for you. To now this year, you're substance free and waking up joyful every day after a year of working for it. You worked for it.
Yeah, I still work for it.
Yeah.
I still, you know, went to the church this morning and I had like outbursts. The words the pastor was speaking today, they just triggered something in my heart. So it still worked. But that's kind of the beauty of it, that I thought last year that, okay, I'm devoting 2017 to self-exploration, to plug in to myself. And then 2018, I'll be kind of, you know, I will know for sure what to do in my life. I will know what I want to do career-wise. Things will change drastically. So now I see that, not as easy, Sasha. Calm down. But 2017 was the most important year because it opened the door for me now. And now I did reconnect with myself. I did plug into myself because now I wake up and I have this joy regardless of what's happening in my life.
Yeah.
I still work in advertising, different job, but still advertising. I'm still single, although I had a beautiful love story last year, but I'm still single. I'm still not sure what to do creatively wise, but I feel joy just from being on this earth. And I know that every day that I live here, it brings me closer to my purpose.
Yeah.
I just know it. Like, I don't believe in it. I know it. Like, this knowledge that I am one with the universe, with the God. I am one with the nature. I'm kind of one with you on the energy level. It's so freaking beautiful and joyful. And I sometimes don't even know what to do with it.
That's so great. I wish we had more time. Do you want to take a minute to think about what do you want to do with it? What do you want next for this next year? Or is there something else you want to spend a minute on?
Well, I kind of wanted you to play that last track, but I know we don't have time.
We can do it.
Next year, I just want to continue this journey. I've had the worst depression, but I've also been the happiest I've ever been in my life this past year. And I just kind of message to you all guys who's listening to Radio for Brooklyn. You don't have to wait for shit to happen to you to start this journey of awakening. You can just start it today. Like, seriously, this is the best thing I've ever done to myself, to actually forcing myself into facing myself, if I can put it this way.
So well said.
Like, you have to face yourself. But when you face yourself, like truly, deeply face yourself, that's when, you know, plug-in happens.
Magic happens.
Plug-in to universe, God, whatever you call it, plug into yourself. Like, don't wait. Like, really, just do it today. Do it next year. This is the best gift you can possibly do to yourself. And also to others, because everyone will benefit from that.
Everyone benefits. That's so beautiful.
All right, we have 5 seconds.
Thank you for your vulnerability.
Thank you.
Loved it. Bye, everyone. Happy 2018.
Happy New Year.